So what is your own research in transferring research?
Ladies and gentlemen, we will slowly start. As you know, this is the second day of our research colloquium, which we have organized now for the first time. And today we had our yesterday plenary sessions, and then we had also simultaneous breakaway sessions. And the atmosphere, as far as I observed, I went to all of them and took some photographs, was really inspiring. There were really nice discussions and a lot of nice presentations. And the same goes for this morning sessions as well. I think it was really exciting and inspiring discussions. And today what we will do now is that we'll have a roundtable discussion, and we've invited representatives with different perspectives to education. And we are doing this not online, but we are recording the discussions. And again, online was not possible because we don't have any people to do that, because there's so many things happening at the same time. The university, like I said, we have a record number of doctoral dissertations taking place today, and a record number of other events as well. But we are, because of our colleagues and especially doctoral students' request, we are recording this session as well. So it will be available for those who participate in the seminar and also for our university staff and students, and hopefully some of the material that we can discuss with you, how you think we could use it in the future. And the topic we have today is the future. So we are looking at what is the role of research when we gaze at the future, and what do we think, how we can use research, and how does the future look like? How do we know what the future looks like? And I have invited here today Jan Markus Holm, who is the Chief Executive Officer of the EduCluster Finland company, and doing a lot of education export, and focusing on that especially, but also looking at the education sector, what happens here in Finland. And Jan Markus is also participating in the Future Forum, or what we call SITRA, which is the Finnish Independence Foundation funding sort of initiatives which have national value. And then we do have Professor Anna-Maria Poikkeus, our Vice Dean and in charge of research, whom we already met yesterday. And yesterday our discussion was really, what are we doing? What is the research at the Faculty of Education? But today the focus is on the future. And then we have also our visiting senior lecturer, Dr. Aileen Atlan from the University of Aberdeen, who's done research on adult education and politics of education, and has been also a visiting lecturer here this week, and also interested in the future and what is the role of research when we are moving in the future. And then we have Professor Päivi Häkkinen, who many of you do know, from the Finnish Institute for Educational Research, and her topic is very much on ICT use in education. And I think the interactive part, especially when it comes to teachers' involvement and students' involvement in ICT use in education and learning. And then we have Professor Aino-Kristiina Räkkönen, who is from the Institute of Educational Leadership. And her research has certainly a lot to do on leadership, but especially do we call it collaborative leadership? Yes.
And dialogues.
And dynamics, yes. And what we will do is we have to share the microphones. We are sitting in the front of the room, and we will not use the microphones when you present, so we have to, I'll give you mine as well. Mm-hmm. And what we do now is that I have asked you some questions already in advance, and I'll go them maybe one by one, but certainly you've got the freedom to discuss. But I would like to have short sort of points of view on each topic when I ask you something. And then we do have also time for questions from the audience. And that we start first with around here. And my first question is concerning the future. How does the future of education and learning look like, in your opinion, according to your experience? And Jan Markus, do you want to start?
Why not?
Okay, can we hear this? Yeah, probably. Okay, good.
Yeah, the future, especially here in Finland, it seems to be quite problematic, especially when it comes to the funding of education. I'm not sure if all of you know what is the situation for the time being. Of course, now we have had an election here in Finland, and the new government will come into the picture. This has been a very interesting journey for me to see the policy and politics through the Sitra Fund eyes, and now we have trying to be preparing some suggestions to our coming government, and I'd like to raise a couple of points here. There will be no extra money for education, at least in Finland. I'm not sure how is it in other countries all around, but not especially in Finland. So how to focus and how to target the existing money or diminishing money? New way, and this is one of the tricky questions. And how to create a system where we could develop a circle to renew and redesign, develop the education very rapidly and very compact way. One point that we have been wanting to raise up is the practice of testing. I'm not really sure about the correct term in by means of education, but it's kind of a kokeilukulttuuri. Do you go experimentation culture in education? That's very crucial how we see the system, and also from the normative guidance towards the. Goal orientation steering of these funds, and one very very interesting and important thing is how can we change our education system, especially here in Finland, to be much more flexible for individual learner or student to find the path. Like out of the box ideas, instead of what we are having now here in Finland. One very interesting point here is also to change our Board of Education to kind of a resource center. I'm not sure. Please raise your hands. How many of you know so-called What Works centers? I know that there are some in Great Britain, especially. This is What Works. Please raise your hands. Nobody knows. So this is kind of a benchmark for Finnish system and Finnish government also. How could we improve our system by benchmarking these What Works centers? This is a very good idea. I'm really for to that. Well, basically, 3 points how we need to change our system. To make it more agile, that's for sure one of the points. We need to focus on every single student's strengths. We are not emphasizing that enough at the time being. And of course, we trust on education in Finland. So. It's also politically very good situation here that we are having. Even though the government will change, we have kind of a consensus in putting resources in education, and this is also how it needs to be in the future. And I'm very positive on that will happen also. Basically, I think this is all for now, like opening words from my side. I also want to mention to you that this is quite a big group. It's almost 30 people who are belonging to the Sitra New Education Forum, and I've been only in some of the groups, but I have some material, background material with me now here, so I can tell you what we have been discussing like generally in this forum. Okay, thanks.
Okay, thank you. It's really hard to predict what would be the sort of the future lines of research that would be helpful, which would help us solve some of the difficult problems which are facing us, maybe the marginalization, alienation of students, or how the schools are sort of making everybody participants. I think that our research nowadays knows a lot about individual factors in the students and in the teachers, but knowing more about the culture and the sort of the learning community, that does help engaging students actively, helping them to find the motivation that they need to be persistent and find somebody really cares about them in what they're doing, how they're feeling. So I've been quite surprised when we've been to schools. We went to one school this week where the school is going through a big reform where they want to change their culture to more a community teamwork school. So the idea is to take away the chairs and desks and work in bigger teams. And I think that when you're doing something like that, you have to be very sort of listening to the feelings, the fears, and sort of try to find out what would help the whole community of teachers and the students to make that transition. So I think we should have more research on the teamwork, the collaboration aspects, the interaction, what kind of inquiry, what kind of pedagogical ways of using technology or using the classroom as a resource would be helpful. I think we have done that research, so I know that Päivi has been doing that, but I think that we still have a lot to do in that field. When we were driving to the school, Tina Silander, the head of our department, was saying that, well, maybe we should do some revisions in our teacher selection of the student teachers. Maybe we should select, it would be a good idea to select a group of teachers, becoming teachers based on the sort of the openness to ideas or having this very strong desire to develop, to take new perspectives, make new insightful ideas. I think that we would like to have all teachers like that and all students of ours, but maybe sort of specifically sort of foster that kind of learning in our teacher training that would also become the lever for teachers in the fields. So I think that we are sort of heading to a new kind of culture in the schools where this kind of idea that you would stick to your own students, or you would only care about your own group, or you would stay in your own room and close the door, it won't work anymore. And we have to know about what's going to help us to be more interactive and sort of trust our colleague and learn from our colleague. And that kind of research is needed, I think.
Can you hear me all right? I think it's been very interesting for me to be here in Finland for a week and to understand that many of the concerns that we have in Scotland are shared. In Scotland, we've recently introduced a new curriculum for all ages called the Curriculum for Excellence. And I've been hearing a little bit about the new curriculum here in Finland too. And there are many common themes, and I think you've already mentioned many of those themes. The idea is the curriculum is much more integrated, so we're moving away from specific disciplines, specific subject areas, trying to integrate across the curriculum, trying to use greater resources and connect schools much more with communities. and to integrate across sectors, across schools, kindergartens, and adult education and universities. So that much more holistic approach to education is something that is at the heart of our new curriculum in Scotland. And I see that echoed in the curriculum here in Finland, but also in other places across Europe. So I think many of the directions of travel in terms of new curricula are shared in many international contexts. I think that's very exciting to think that we would move away from education which is broken down into specific boxes, is also opening up out of buildings, away from classrooms, and integrating across communities. However, there is a pessimistic part of my attitude as well, that actually what I see in some places is that education is actually very conservative and change is very difficult. We've now been trying to introduce aspects of the new curriculum in Scotland for 5 years, and there is a great deal of resistance in some areas. So I think, although I can see that there are very exciting trends for new education internationally, there is also part of me that worries that those changes don't happen. That in fact, if we look at schools, certainly in Scotland, we can see many of the same things that were there in schools 50 years ago, if not 100 years ago. So actually, change happens with great difficulty. And I think perhaps that is where the research agenda is. How do we make change? How do we make change positively? How do we engage different people in understanding and contributing to change? And particularly, how do we involve teachers in negotiating that change and negotiating change that is in everybody's interests? And how do we bring people together to do that? And I think in terms of the research agenda, certainly in the UK, research too often is top-down and is not collaborative and participative enough. And I think if we can take forward research which is more participative, engages more perspectives, then perhaps we can truly take change in those more positive directions.
Okay. Yes, can you hear me? Yeah. Okay, it seems that we are quite similar-minded. It's easy to agree with all of you, but if I try to not predict the future, but anticipate the future, because it's extremely difficult to predict anything. So if you think about a child that is starting a school now, he or she will be in a working life still in 2070. So it's quite easy to understand that that working life will be different. I mean, it probably, because we can already now see that it's the work tasks will be more or less knowledge intensive work that requires something like collaboration, distributed expertise and things like that. Also very strong learning skills and strategic skills, because the problems won't be, at least, as simple as today, but they will be very complex, and usually the kind of problems that no one can solve on his or her own. So this is easily understandable, the challenges of making then also curricula cross-disciplinary and cross-curricular and not single subjects, and focus on thinking skills, collaboration skills and such. I think that it's also quite easy to anticipate that you don't even need to be technology determinist to say that technology will be there, no matter whether we want it or not. It will be very deeply embedded into our into our surrounding everyday environment, often also in a way that we don't even see by ourselves. it will be embedded into objects, into physical objects. We talk about Internet of Things and virtual and physical seem to merge in many ways. And many schools are already now experimenting things like three-dimensional printing, meaning that you move from virtual models to concrete physical objects very easily. But of course, this doesn't mean that it will be simple and without any challenges. And that's the point where we need research, also very critically oriented experimental research. And I think that we, on the one hand, need research to be very agile, and what Jan Markus told about this experimental culture. But we also need very long-term research on even longitudinal studies, because as we noticed, the changes happen very slowly, and with only very short-term experiments, we get only very, very narrow picture. But I think what will be changing in the future as well is the assessment practices and tools that we can utilize in assessment. And some of you may have heard about big data and learning analytics and such things that give us very concrete tools to capture very systematically what our students or pupils do and capture that process, analyze it quickly with very advanced, for example, statistical methods, and most importantly, bring that data in an understandable form back to the users themselves. I think this is what we really need at this time, especially if we want to experiment this kind of agile experimental culture. So, because assessment is something that extremely strongly influence on the development of pedagogical practices as well. So I think that our research should focus even much more than nowadays on assessment. Yeah. Okay, maybe on the next round the rest.
So hello all. Now I take, of course, my discipline's perspective is leadership and management. And I think that there are three aspects that are very important in the future, also in practice and as regards research. First is that I think that we can't anymore lead any change. We spoke about change agents in the 19s and have strategies how to change the school and the educational organizations. And for me as a researcher and also as a practitioner, because I've been a vice rector a long time ago, I think that we must lead within the change. You can't lead change anymore. Of course, there are small changes you can manage within the educational organization. They are those ordinary things, but there is so much that is changing in the society and amongst the learners and families and cultures and so on. So leading in change is one perspective. And what is related to leading in change is that we should take the complexity science with the leadership research so that adapt that in a very wise way to leadership research and have a non-linear understanding that if we are speaking about the future and how to predict, I'm going to speak it later about this non-linear thing. And the second perspective is, as you said, is collaborative leadership. I'm totally convinced that a time for heroes in the schools, that there is a principal who knows everything and can solve every problem and is there in the head, it's over. Of course, the principal has a very, very important role. Without the principal and good principals, you can't lead and manage the organization, but you need the whole staff. You need the synergy, shared goals, purposeful practices and co-performance and deep and mutual learning amongst the staff. And the third perspective is I quoted it from Wake because he is an old guy, I think, over 80s, but still so sharp that it's amazing. And he has written a book that I think that it's absolutely necessary for leadership for tomorrow. It's about managing the unexpected. And if I put everything in a nutshell, what Wake speak about how to manage the future and manage the unexpected, you know, you must put expected and unexpected and mindful awareness together. And what is the sum? It's mindful management. It means that you see all the weak signals around you in the school and try to be very open to different things and don't use any ready-made strategies or certain solutions if there is an unexpected situation. And Wake says that there are five ways. First, you must be very aware of your errors and learn with them and don't be ashamed because everybody is doing them. Second, don't oversimplify. Don't take guarantee that how you manage yesterday is the same thing tomorrow. You must be very situated, sensitive. And the third is that look about operations, not about your strategies. So what is happening there? The fourth is resilience. And the fifth for Wake is expertise, so that you must find a good team in your school, if you can do it, and have a very deep and multiple expertise, and don't go according to the hierarchies and authority, but follow where the knowledge and understanding is. Thank you.
So this was a very sort of thorough, I think you almost responded to all my questions, I would say. What I would like to do, there's a couple of issues I would like to raise from the discussion now, that you all sort of, you talked about how change is difficult, and what do you think, what contributes to change? What can really motivate people for change? What contributes to change? And I think several of you said about now in the last piece that it is about being leading in change, within change. And I think you all talk about responding to change. Anna Maja, you mentioned like assessment is something more that is guiding, you know, all our decisions and guiding what we plan. And the difficult task, I think, is for us to plan for the future. And you all talked about the uncertain future, something that this we don't know what it will be. I like the idea also that where are the students going to be in 70 years, for instance. And I think it was very fascinating to learn from Scotland also that what happens there, what is emphasized now is really the sort of that you work as a community. And I think that is something that was I think raised by all of you, that we need this culture in schools to change things, to be everybody involved for the motivation. But what really causes change? What do you think motivates people for change?
I can try to answer a little bit because we were in that school and we've been doing interventions with teachers and looking at changes in their sort of beliefs and attitudes and how they feel about their work. They are very positive about it. They like teaching, but then they also see the challenges there. And when we went to this school, especially, we were sort of trying to promote this idea that yes, you can learn and change most if you work together, if you share all the uncertainties and the like worries, and you are sort of open about what you're doing, you sort of let people into your mind. And what we're doing is that we ask the teachers to videotape their teaching, and it's very intimate to show your work to another person. But when you've done that, you are sort of more trustworthy. You can tell your friends that this is what I did, it didn't work. That's okay. We can sort of figure out what would work. And we were sort of so excited that there were four teachers who sort of came to us. There was a math teacher and a mother tongue teacher. Yes, I want to be in that group and sort of share my work with others. And I think that brings about change, because that also changes what the teachers do in the classroom. They might also be more open to to having their students work together and try things and share successes and failures, but sort of learn while doing that.
If I could just contribute then from Scotland, these are ideas that are becoming very prevalent in relation to professional development. We're calling them professional learning communities. And in fact, the new standards for teachers are making that idea of ongoing learning in communities, experimentation in classrooms, using action research, has now become part of our standard of ongoing registration for teachers. So teachers in schools now have to demonstrate that they're using those kinds of action research processes for their own learning. But increasingly, people see the importance of that being in professional learning communities, and that those communities involve as many people as possible in the school and in the community to learn together.
Yes, maybe.
We all look at this change also from our own perspectives, and in my case, the case of educational technology and how change is seen through bringing ICT to support learning in Finnish classrooms, for example. And every now and then we are worried about whether we have a joint national vision about this. Recent public discussions have been going around this issue quite a lot, that we don't have a joint vision about our future school. And perhaps that's why there are these kind of forums that Jan Markus mentioned, because it has been very bottom-up work, and our teachers have a strong autonomy in classroom and so on. So when we are doing research and also some developmental work on using ICT for learning, we are struggling a little bit whether we should be working more with the teachers who are a kind of a or with the teachers and projects that could be called a kind of a lighthouse projects that are already very advanced. They have their own strong visions, and they would do it anyway without our support or not. And or whether we should be working with that broader group of teachers. And that's perhaps also a challenge for more generally for educational research, whether we should be working always with this kind of schools that we that are very innovative and directing for the future and so on, or whether our knowledge base gives some evidence for let's say for ordinary schools on, for example, when they think whether their learning outcomes have a descending or rising trend or what is it. But this change is easy when we are working with these kind of innovative projects, enthusiastic teachers, with the schools in which also the principals are usually very strong driving forces in this case. So not a clear answer, but just a reflection.
Jan Markus.
Okay, thanks. I think I'm going to give you some points from our forum and also shake some barriers and the old-fashioned ways of doing things here in Finland. These points are, for instance, even though we are having members of different unions also in this group, we all think generally that, okay, these unions and lobbyings, they are making these barriers to really develop the education for the future. So we have two rigid boxes now when it comes to the, you know, the national system and hierarchies. That's not flexible at all. We should and especially this is interesting point that we all have raised up. We have missed the joy of learning and joy in learning. There is no enough joy at schools, in classrooms. So what to do with that? That really needs some change. Interesting point is also that do we need to focus on different age, certain age groups in learning? This is a very good question that we have been, you know, circulating around in our discussions. What the heck? Because if we are pointing towards of skills, even though you are having different means of learning, the ways of learning, should we also mix the age groups? That's a very good question. I already mentioned about this experimental culture. We should emphasize like maker culture also in education, how to enhance that. And, well, obviously to take the whole surrounding, the whole society more into the school life, into the education. Why not to bring all the, you know, the third party sector, all the companies, industry, more into the picture. And also one very crucial point is that already now we should see every teacher like a personal entrepreneur of him or herself. So more of that attitude and emphasis onto the doing. When it comes to the future of work, all the labors, what we actually do in the future. So we should have more of this experimentally way of doing. Do we really need these branches of science or degrees that we are now having? Should we have more open spaces, more open way of learning to find the passion of learning, every single person's passion, what I really want to learn? We already know now by means of, or in terms of having the technology, for instance, the youngsters are bringing their own jobs by doing gaming, you know, game industry things and so forth. So this is really something that we need to focus and at least recognize in education. Well, this is all for now.
Yes, I would like to go with these professional learning communities you said, because I think that they are so important in the future. We've done a research, an international research, where we took these very good professional learning communities and schools, but anyway, it was very clear that it strengthened the understanding we already have that one thing to change a school is atmosphere. The second pillar of professional learning communities is leadership practices, and the third are those working and so on practices. I think that there are two levels of learning: the learning of the students and pupils, and then the learning of the staff and the leaders. And professional learning communities are very good for that. And somebody asked me the same question in a lecture somewhere in Europe and asked what to do with the resistance and what to do with those people. And I think that one answer is in professional learning communities, when the atmosphere is so important. An atmosphere can be more easily changed than culture. For me, culture is the foundation of a school. There are norms, values, principles, everything that is quite stable. But you have the atmosphere, and you can, with this leadership and working practices, change the atmosphere, not very quickly, but step by step and more easily than the culture. And when the atmosphere changes, the culture can also be changed. And that's the foundation that should be followed to change, and that is the most difficult thing to change in a school. But they are those good schools we've done. But anyway, it helps, and it's a little bit difficult to get the other schools involved in research, because sometimes they are so troubled and they have so many problems that they don't have resources and energy and forces to come along with the study. Requires quite a lot of resources of the organization.
Okay. Yes, one comment. Yes.
And I'll invite something from the audience.
Among our group, a couple of comments from a couple of teachers and principals. They argue that they think that every single teacher and principal in Finnish schools, they should apply. They should be forced to apply their positions every 5 years. So I think this is quite an interesting idea. You know, this is an idea how to keep up developing yourself. So I really enjoyed this argument, and I think most of the guys in our group they agreed with an idea. You know, ideologically, because something needs to be changed, something needs to be happened at least here in Finland, and this is quite a good shaking.
Quite shaky, I think. Maybe yes.
Perhaps there are also other ways to keep that that continuous professional developmental mind of teachers going on. And for example, we would need much more innovative models on getting teacher training and professional development of teachers in the field into interaction. And our teacher students should go already during their first year to real schools to get and have interaction with the experienced teachers. It's a very clear win-win situation for both parties, and we have started doing that with the teachers in the cloud program. But that's only one field, of course. But more broadly, perhaps it could be a kind of a force for teachers in the field to get involved in this.
Absolutely.
Another alternative for yeah. this that this, you should this apply.
This is something that we have been spoken more seriously about. So,
yeah.
Could we have Eileen?
But it's very interesting. And we don't quite have to apply for our own jobs. But in Scotland, we now do have what's called professional update. So every 5 years, we have to demonstrate the learning that we've done in order to retain our professional registration.
Yeah.
And that applies to teacher educators in the universities as well.
Okay. So professional updates could be a solution. Mm-hmm. Right, we'll have some comments or questions from the audience. Yes, over there. Can you just wait and we'll get you the microphone so we can record this one as well?
Hi, thank you all so much. I'm sorry that I missed the very, very first part of the introductions, but I wanted to kind of go off what you're talking about now, and I apologize already that this thought is not very well formulated in my own mind, but I'm just thinking about how you're talking about the idea of like career paths and career trajectories, that we're thinking about learning in the sense of growth and development over a lifespan. And at the same time, we're thinking about, or you're raising issues like entrepreneurship, getting corporations more involved. And it seems to me that there's, I don't know, something in here about competition and collaboration, that fundamentally life is not a competition, that we can just grow and develop in a very natural way. But at the same time, we need an education, we think about assessment, we think about how to spur people on toward professional development or how to evaluate students in schools. And so I wonder how you think about this. Like, how is it that you see the future of education in which students are, on the one hand, free to kind of pursue anything in a very open way where they're not being judged? I mean, you don't win life, you just live. But on the other hand, that people somehow need to be incentivized to develop in a way. And how do corporations enter into that, or how does testing enter into that in your mind?
Well, I'm I hesitate to step in, but I think it's very interesting because you're identifying for me what I think is an inherent tension in educational policy internationally at the moment. That actually, in some ways, what is being advocated is much more open, much greater autonomy, in some ways very divergent, and the idea of lifelong learning is still very prevalent. At the same time, it seems to me that actually policy is also about much narrower outcomes for education, so that in some ways... we're advocating divergent learning in some respects, but to very instrumental ends. And certainly in the UK, the most prominent term is employability. So although divergent ways of learning and modes of learning are advocated, at the same time it is recognised that those forms of learning are mainly for income generation and for financial means. And I think that's a real tension. And I think somebody else mentioned earlier that assessment drives education to a large extent. And I think that that's very true in the sense that assessment, certainly in the UK, is very linked to those kinds of instrumental ends for economic reasons. And that is driving education. I was very... I was very happy this morning to visit one of your adult education institutes here of liberal arts education, and it was a pleasure to see the range of adult learning that is in offer here. That kind of adult learning is almost disappearing in Scotland. Our adult education has been underfunded, and where it exists, it has to prove that it has an impact on employability. So I think one of the things I would say is hold on to your adult education that is about learning life-wide for the whole range of reasons for learning and growth and development.
Perhaps just one point to this assessment. Further on, I think that although we don't have in Finnish schools this kind of a standardized testing approach, we still have a fairly individual assessment culture or based on individual learning outcomes. Although we have a strong autonomy that teachers have in schools, but there are some visions that have been suggested whether we should... for example, split the half of so-called teacher-directed, or not, this is a wrong term, not teacher-directed, but a common teaching that is similar to everyone. Mm-hmm. We should split that to the half and then leave the rest to something like collaborative work, project work, based work, and various alternative ways of working, and I think that we would need this kind of a bigger structural changes to our schools, but not just like that we think that it might be good, but we would need a research base and evidence in order to be sure that it goes to the right direction. But I also see the dilemma here between the assessment culture and what we really are talking in our rhetorics.
Yeah, short comment when it comes to this third sector and companies taking also into account in the assessment. In vocational technical training in Finland, we have had this system of combining and connecting the industry into the assessment of pupils for ages already. We have the origin of our vocational training from UK and from Germany, and we have joined this and created it ourselves here in Finland almost Is it 20 or 30 years at least? I'm not a professional in education itself, but still, also in this forum, we have been discussing very throughoutly that why not to take the third sector also into account when it comes to the evaluation and assessment, because our youngsters, what do they do in their free time? They go to their hobbies, they make this and that, they make some arts and music, dance, etc. So why not to try to take these aspects also into account when we are assessing and making the personal path of education for this individual learner?
I had one teacher student come to my office this morning, and he was saying that, well, he feels that the schools are doing too little of that kind of extracurricular sort of project work. And he felt that, well, he himself as a teacher would like to do more of that. So it's not only the teaching, like I know that the things that you need to learn and I'll give them to you, but more having these kind of informal opportunities. And the idea of the third sector has also been involved in one of the applications that we are going to send to the Strategic Council Call, where the idea is to look at the problems for equality and equity in Finnish schools. And it seems that some schools are very nicely resourced. They have a lot of extra options that children can go to, and some do not. And to have that range where the third sector could be joining the schools to have this kind of more informal ways of learning in the days, the flexible school days. That would be something that we want to at least experiment in the town. And we have found a lot of schools who are willing to try that, and also some organizations. But what we feel is important that the teachers will have to be also compensated, and they need to have the consultation that they need.
So I take a little bit higher abstract level now, because when I listened to you, I thought that perhaps we can't predict the future, but for me there is one tendency I see, that it's more and more increasingly tensions coming within education, and that can influence paradoxes. There is a special stream in management research that looks upon tensions and paradoxes, and I think that it can be a danger to sometimes tensions and paradoxes are good to see the things in new ways, but I think that our education for the future should be much more aware of those tensions that are now in the air and can influence and impact such paradoxes that are very difficult to solve later on. Though there are Smith and Lewis, for example, researchers who've made a research where they divide tensions between learning, performing, and organizing. And I think that education have these kind of three systems going on at the same time. And very often when I listen to assessment and everything you said, they are either about learning, performing, or organizing, or combination of two or three. And this makes the thing very complex in the future.
Thank you. And then question from here.
Hi. Actually, I don't really have a question, but more observation, and I'm pretty happy you brought up the subject of extracurriculum learning, because I'm studying education, but I'm not like a teacher, and I'm not interested in like what's happening in the schools, but more what's happening outside, mm-hmm. and the education which is happening outside. And throughout these last months, I've been here in Jyväskylä, I've been really surprised that this is really left aside, and there's not much research. So I, like these 2 days here, I've been like a bit disappointed, because I was like, oh well, it's interesting what's happening in school, but I'm not interested really, that's not my interest. And it's a lot of talk about, yeah, we want to do, like, create, like, communities, like, link school and communities. You said, like, the whole society has to be into education. But then you're only talking about what's happening in the schools. And I think the extra educational learning is, like, as important as what's happening in schools. And I think that's left aside. And I would, like, yeah, that's really, like, a frustration for me. So I'm happy you at least mentioned it, because, yeah, at least one good thing.
Yeah, I think this is a good point. But I think that this bridging of formal and informal is not the only dimension in which, at least I would like to see the future learning environments be, in a way, hybrid, in that sense that they, at its best, they can integrate formal and informal learning resources, they can integrate individual and collaborative, so that we are not only talking about whether this should be done alone or in groups or in broader social networks. It can be integrating virtual and physical. This comes also very close to the formal-informal border. Gives certain affordances to integrate, like informal resources when we have technology available. And also, what I think Elina is interested in, it can also bridge the earlier gap between local and global. For the young generation, it's not anymore a challenge at all to do learning projects in global communities, to do some crowdsourcing in social media. And so it doesn't really matter where your learning partner is, if we over characterize a little bit. Of course, it, in a classroom, it matters, but more generally, I mean, you have so many more resources than what we used to have, let's say, still 10 or 15 years ago.
And if I could add here, maybe a lot more possibilities also to challenge our existing knowledge and skills when you go connect local and global. There are always things that you take for granted back home in your own small world, but when you're encountered with something which is a little bit beyond the sort of your own closest circle, then I think you do challenge your expertise, you challenge your skills and your knowledge, and I think this is very important, not only for the learners, but especially for the educators and the leadership, I would think. And that's why I would like these things to be integrated into our programs and education here.
Yes.
Do you want any of you comment on this one, Eileen?
Just very quickly, I mean, this idea of connecting schools and communities, and we have community workers. Well, we have some community. We have a few community workers left in Scotland. But it's very much a part of our new curriculum for excellence. However, as I said, there have been barriers to that happening. And at the moment, it still tends to be that the school decides that they might call upon a resource on their terms. One of the ways in which I think we can begin to counter that is through shared professional learning. So instead of the professional learning communities simply being teachers in schools, I think those professional learning communities have to include professionals from the different sectors, include other people. And if we can change the kinds of professional development so that professional learning becomes more integrated, then perhaps, again, I think we can understand those different perspectives and break down some of those barriers.
Thank you. And then?
Yeah, I had a question. I don't know if it really fits maybe in the round table, but when I think about education, sometimes I don't only think about the teachers or the schools itself, but the role of the parents. So how the schools of the future will include the figures of the parents or the role of the parents and what they say? Because, for example, in my country, what parents say is the truth. And it cannot be questioned. And be careful if you're a teacher that tells that, well, some things should be different. And some decades ago, it was absolutely the opposite. What the teacher said was the real truth of everything and no matter of discussion apart from that. So I would like to know what is the role of the parents in the future in education, even though they are not really inside the schools.
That was a very good question, because I think that the role of the parents in Finland has changed a lot. The teacher position has been so respected during decades in our country, and I don't say that, sometimes they say that parents have become more difficult, but I think that they've become more aware what is going on there, and our culture is more diverse. So that's a very good question, because I agree totally with you that the parents should be included into the professional learning community or something else, and it's something that should be taken care of. That's very important. But the role of the parents in Finland has changed a lot. They have a lot of influence on teachers and their teaching, and they have a lot of demands and questions and expectations.
But parents can be also the best possible role models in giving an example of the joy of learning, for example. And I think that Anna-Maja knows much better on the motivational effects on, for example, how parents encourage or discourage the...
Yeah, especially in the early years.
Yeah.
They have a really big influence on the child's self-concept and the early motivation, and the... is those children who have any kind of problems in academics, for them the parental support and the good collaboration with parents and the teachers is really important, because that could be the resilience factor, that the child hears that kind of positive feedback. Yes, we know that you struggle, but we still believe in you, and we give you all the support if they are sort of doing the same kind of work in understanding the child's needs. We also think that parents should be more actively involved. Some, I think daycare systems in Finland, they do maybe a better job. Schools are also inviting parents, but it's not so easy to find the ways that would sort of attract all the parents to these work, where you could actually do a lot of influencing the practices, influencing the curriculum. It's also mandatory that's a teacher's role to invite the parents, but we still have a hard time finding right ways to give that message loud and clear that yes, we really do want you to come here, sit and observe. For instance, I think I've only been once in my daughter's school and observing, even though it's okay, you could go there, but you don't see that very often. How does it work in Scotland?
Well, interestingly, one of the growth areas in terms of community work is in what we call family learning. And partly that area is growing because the longitudinal research is now showing that there are very positive outcomes for children in schools, in their achievement in schools, if their parents and their families are involved in family learning. So family learning workers are not teachers, they're community workers, sometimes drawn from social work and health working together. But their role is to involve the families and the school together in learning. So there is a dual focus. Partly it's about engaging families in the schools, but also it's about allowing families to understand their own role in educating the child. And the hope is that as the parents are also educated, then the outcomes, not just for their own children, but for their children's children, will continue. So it is a growth area in Scotland. It's seen as a means of early intervention, particularly for families in social disadvantaged areas.
Thank you.
Sorry, if I also have a comment on that, based on some discussions once again in this group. I'm very techie guy myself, and I rely on all the big data and all the social media tools and et cetera. And of course, all the learners nowadays should use more and more of these tools, also the parents. So I want to be a little bit idealistic once again, but how about to use different kind of a revealing and very transparent technical tools in following the learning path of the children or even the other learners as well. So there are huge amount of possibility, for instance. But what is a disgrace from my perspective at the moment in Finland, our teachers doesn't know how to use the ICT tools, and we have a huge gap in that. So, but hopefully we are getting better in a couple of years now.
I actually want to comment about the parental involvement. I want to comment on the involvement of parents in the school. I'm still in contact with the people I work with from my school. Somebody just put something on a group WhatsApp, and this is a letter that was written to a teacher by a mom. It says, "Mrs. Clifton, Ron can bring his PSP to class all the time he wants to. He has my permission. I am his mom. And what I say goes, Ron's mom." So when you brought this up, I actually quickly thought about that, and I thought it would be actually nice to share it, because some parents still do not understand what happens at schools. So if the parents are more involved and they understand what's happening at school, maybe it will be a lot easier for teachers to do their work. Thank you.
Yeah. Perhaps to this discussion about the parents' role, just one thing is this involvement into school activities and how you can follow this, but I think perhaps this is a comment as a parent, but I think that one of the most important things is really that we show the model for passion of learning, so that you are really interested in what your kids do, what they have learned today, and not just that whether you did your homework or not, but show with your own model on how inspiring learning can at its best be, and discuss about these things, are interested in what they are doing. So I think this is one of the most important roles of parents. We know that so much of our learning happens outside the classroom. I mean, anyway.
Okay, one more comment from the audience, and then I got another question for you.
My thoughts are going all round. It's been a very interesting discussion to follow, and lovely to have different perspectives brought in. I'm thinking partly as a parent then, when I've gone into the primary school and the teacher sort of asked me to then sit.
Can
on
you
the front.
Speak a bit closer to the microphone,
yeah.
Please?
So when I've gone into primary school as a parent and the teacher has asked me to sit on the front row in this tiny little primary school seat, and then she's stood in front of us and treated us like the primary school children. And I've thought, there is something to be developed here. That really, if we want parents and teachers to work together, we have to let the parents come out of the primary school role. And also that one of the first lessons she told us was that our children need to first learn how to be quiet. And I was a little bit distressed that my son was already asking, "Mummy, when am I going to learn something in school?" And I think that children go with this positive anticipation, and parents want to encourage their kids. But it's this big partnership that I will ask my son to listen to the teacher. And it will be much easier if I believe the teacher will then be offering something of real value to my son. I'm saying this also as a teacher educator, very aware that we've got a new curriculum coming, very aware that this is quite a wonderful opportunity for some kind of change. But if something doesn't happen when it's first introduced, I'm concerned that the momentum, the opportunity will go. We have, what, another 15 months before it is implemented actually in the classroom. How are we going to do it? How are we going to make the most of this 15 months ahead of us to really then initiate something positive?
In one of the sessions this morning, there was a lot of discussion on negotiation, how change is negotiated with the teachers. And then could we add to that, that how change is also discussed with parents and maybe even our students, with the students as well. So change, like you all said here, is difficult, mm-hmm. and there are certain sort of resistance towards our change in general, and there are always some who are more suspicious and some who see issues or changes as opportunities. So could dialogue be the way to develop that, and this sort of professional communities which go beyond the school? I see everybody nodding. Right. Then I go to another question that I had in mind, which is linked to that, and it's also diversity that comes to the question as well. Children, each child is unique, as we all know. We all are unique. But then diversity, how do we address that, and how can we do that better in the future? Diversity is actually a global issue at the moment. It's a challenge everywhere, wherever we look at it. And another challenge that we do face is an increasing inequality in schools, whether it comes to regional or whether it's related to diversity in general. It can be related to socioeconomic status and increasing gaps between the poor and the rich. So diversity in general is increasing, and at the same time we are trying to become more and more global, and international influence is growing when it comes to education. What do you think we can do to reduce inequalities? ICT has been suggested as one of the solutions, but at the same time it may also increase inequality. And competition, we see, it's motivating for most people. It's motivating economies, countries, decision making. But at the same time, competition is also marginalizing often some groups when it comes to education. What do you think could be done better when it comes to education for the future? To reduce big problems, which are complex, and there's no simple solutions. So I expect you to have complex responses as well.
Okay, I'm reading some of the points from our memos of this group, and one crucial issue here is to break down the hierarchies that we are having now and go more towards the networks. So this is absolutely one way of tackling this inequality in the future. And as we have been discussing here also, how to bring up the personal abilities of each of the learners and emphasize and support in those. Of course, we have some very practical ideas here which could work, at least in Finnish society, to have kind of a mentors of each of the students, and these kind of mentoring people could also come from the third sector or wherever. They doesn't need always be teachers. And this also works in very, very many levels of education. We are not talking only about the primary school, but also in second and even in adult education. Why not?
I agree heartily about the mentoring and the co-teaching idea, that there are many ways of sort of having several adults in the classroom at the same time, because that helps to address the needs of the children who are diverse. They have diverse needs, and if you don't have time to talk with that child just this minute, then you might lose that opportunity if
he or she is struggling. You need to have more adults there to be able to be there in time for the child to sort of see that, yes, they did see me, and there was somebody who helped me. They have to be professionals, but they don't have to be teachers always. So I agree. They have to be people who know about the pedagogical ways of participatory engaging of students and helping them to be autonomous in their learning. But having only one adult and this diverse group of students, that's going to be hard to be that individualizing.
Well, perhaps I'll contribute something which is maybe a bit contentious. Social justice and the equalities issues is a huge concern in Scotland. We have a widening gap between rich and poor, essentially, in terms of educational outcomes, and in fact it has reversed. It has got worse in Scotland. For my generation, who were accessing education in the 70s and the higher education in the 70s, we had much greater equality of opportunity. That has actually slipped back, so it's a huge concern for us. My field is literacies, though, and one of the things that concerns me is that we often look at we look at responses which are ameliorative. In other words, what we try to do is to create processes that help children from disadvantaged backgrounds to access education which has assumptions which are essentially middle class. And what we don't look at is the way in which schools and education has to change to value the kinds of things that children from different backgrounds and from different cultures bring with them. And that's my concern, and particularly in relation to literacy, there's a great deal of research that suggests that children come with very rich communicative practices which are not recognised by schools. And they start out with a disadvantage in terms of language, often in terms of numeracy practices, not because they are inadequate, but because those are not recognised by schools in which middle-class attitudes and expectations prevail. So I think we also have to think about not just how we can support children to access the assumptions of middle-class education, which is privileged in its assumptions. We actually also have to think about how can schools and education change to value the things that different kinds of children and different kinds of cultures bring.
Okay, it was this diversity and inequality. So perhaps I take a more micro-level perspective on pedagogical practices, not necessarily diversity that covers like students from different cultures, but if I think about the diversity as such, it can be also a positive thing. For example, we have a lot of research evidence from collaborative learning groups in which certain amount of diversity is good in terms of bringing different perspectives and that way raising to the higher abstract level and so on. But it can be a positive thing. In a classroom level, it can be a challenge for a teacher, but a good teacher can also handle that quite well with the modern technique and teaching methods. And I just heard an example from the high school here in Jyväskylä, from the physics course, in which the group of students coming to the physics course one was very diverse from their interests and orientations and what they were aiming at in that course. Some students thought that this is the only course from physics that I will take, whereas some others were very ambitious and thought that we want to head to the medicine after high school and we want to really concentrate on physics and take all the possible courses. And that's a challenge for a teacher, how to organize learning activities, but with she was very skillful designing the activities in a way that technology was embedded into this wholeness. Some students did some trips to the university to make the physics departments to take some measurements, whereas at the same time she could concentrate on these medicine students and so on. So a good teacher can do a lot of things. Also, no matter how divergent the student population is here. But then the inequality, as Elina mentioned, is quite often connected to this ICT issue. And whether it's, for example, concretely this bring your own device movement. For example, in the city of Jyväskylä, in schools there, they have given the recommendation that students can bring their own devices and use them. And of course, they have rules and things on how to behave with the devices, but many people immediately say that it's not equal because of the socioeconomic background and they have different devices and so on. But on the other hand, you can offer more possibilities for all the students when we take all the possible devices in use. Then we can also offer the devices for those who don't have such a good devices, such as we do with the skis and skates with in earlier days. But I think that it's more a possibility than a threat.
Yes, this is a huge question, inequality and diversity, and I started to think about that. There are so many aspects. It's culture, language, intelligence. Do the more talents have a right to have their special programs and so on? So I think that there is also the school and teacher and leadership level, because I started to think about how unequal is now in Finland where you are going to be a teacher, leader or learner, because we have a huge problem with the school buildings with this, mold. And there are now, because I was just in a meeting where I lectured to a group of principals, and they said that in their municipalities they have a big problem because the small schools have put down, and then they put the teachers to schools on the surroundings, and how they will be adapted to the different kind of environments. And then there is a problem that the buildings are not available. And I think that the inequality thing is much more than only culture and language. It's also about how our professionals, teachers and leaders, are able to do their work in such kind of circumstances. But this is at the practical side, and the research side for me is the complexity science could be give some help. I don't know, but could be, say like this. Because we have this different systems. We have the school system, then we have the working life system, we have the municipality, school policy, government, blah, blah, global level, and all these systems are functioning, interacting with each other and influencing each other. And I think that we can't find any solutions for inequality and how to keep diversity as a positive thing without taking care of all these systems that are together. And it's such a problem that we don't have any answer for that. Me either. Neither. Thank you.
One issue that I think I would like to say before we sort of close, and I ask for one word from each of you. But I think one of the issues that I think is also something we need to pay attention to, that there are always new challenges emerging. So I think that was already mentioned earlier when we started our discussion,
And that is one thing that research is required to do, and that is our third task, to be in continuous contact and interaction with our surrounding society, with people, with communities around us. And issues and challenges do emerge, something that we could never foresee in the past that we are dealing with at the moment. And it's not only concerning ICT, it's also concerning security, it's concerning peace, it's concerning several issues. And one of the researchers looking at cosmopolitanism has really suggested that what we need is dialogue, and dialogue should be taught in schools. But one thing I would like to ask from each of you, what would you like to take home from this discussion here today?
Yes, I think so that what I'm taking home with me is the many aspects and perspectives we can take to a same issue, so that we don't think that our own perspective and thoughts are the only ones or the right ones, but try to see the bigger picture in order to make the research better suitable for the future education.
From this discussion, this has been fun and getting new perspectives, although fairly similar-minded. I think we are. I think actually I picked it from Jan Markus's first. Well, one of the first points was this joy of learning, because I had already thought about that very strongly, on how our future schools could be the kind in which learners constantly get inspired and keep themselves engaging in deep learning. I think that's the biggest challenge, and you reminded that, so that's why I think that's one of the messages to be taken to home.
I think the message that I take is that I think you used the word deterministic, and I think actually we are in a culture at the moment where there is a sense of determinism about change, about the direction of travel, such that we all seem to buy into the view that it's inevitable. And I think the role of research can actually be sometimes to question that, and to be continually questioning the direction rather than to accept it as inevitable.
I'd like to hear the comments and your experience that you have had already this kind of change with a curriculum, and it doesn't mean that you have the curriculum that it sort of goes into practice right away. It's more negotiation and dialogue. So those words are something that I sort of feel that, yes, dialogue between the parents and the teachers, dialogue among the teaching community, dialogue from outside partners from the school, and negotiation. Otherwise, we will just have a fancy curriculum, but nothing changes. So something has to change in ourselves and our way of talking to each other.
As a member of the CITRA group, I'm very happy to hear the comments of all the colleagues, especially that we are on the correct path. I also loved all of the comments from you guys in the audience. They're very crucial comments or questions to us, and point is taken. And of course, the third thing, I'm fully supporting Päivi's work, because I completely rely on the technology as a very crucial part in our education and training in future.
It's time to say thank you to all of you, and thank you for participating in the discussion. And as I said earlier, our doctoral students and colleagues requested us to record the discussion, and I hope that we have your permission to have a look at it again. And we wanted to, nicely enough, to have a sort of virtual congress for those who couldn't attend today because there's so many things happening. And what we do is that we'll have it available on the university website, but for staff to use with their passwords and usernames, and then for the students also through their Optima space. So we'll use the technology for that to disseminate this nice discussion. Thank you very much.
Thank you.